Hi, we're back. We're here to talk about storytelling in video games, and this is Script Lock. I am Max Volkman.
And I'm Nick Volkman. Today we have Sissy Jones and Erika Ishii joining us. And Sissy is an award-winning actress whose voice you may have heard in such games as The Walking Dead, Life is Strange, Firewatch, for which she won a BAFTA, Horizon Zero Dawn, and most recently Half-Life Alyx and Call of the Sea. Erika is an actress, host, and producer who you may have heard in such games as Dream Daddy, Destiny 2, Fallout 76, Fortnite, Marvel's Avengers, and the recently released Cyberpunk 2077. Thank you two for both coming on today.
Woohoo! Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for having us. And this is actually cool because I get to chat with Sissy about things too.
I know, I'm so excited.
And we're excited to talk to both of you at the same time.
I love it.
I'm going to ask the most obvious question ever, and I apologize because I know Sissy has answered this a million times in interviews, and probably Erika too, from what I've gathered, but how did both of you get into acting?
Take it, E.
Okay, well, I did the whole child acting thing, actually.
You did?
Yeah. Both my parents are industry people. My dad was a camera assistant and my mom was an editor. And so when I started growing up very rambunctious and extroverted, they thought, oh, well, maybe she'd like to do acting. So they put me in classes and they got me an agent and manager, which is such like a Hollywood thing to do. But it was never, they only let me do it as long as they thought I was having fun doing it. They were never pushy stage parents. They were just like, oh, yeah, she seems like she likes it. And I apparently booked half of what I went out for. So I did a ton of commercials like Barbie and Mattel stuff. I did an episode of Full House. And
sweet.
I'm in the Plays the Thing one, and I was like four. I think it was four. So I got my SAG card in something like 94. So I've been in this industry for a long time, but I kind of stopped I was at UCLA. I was doing a lot of violin. And then I went back, tried to get back into it I was at the Strasbourg Institute and UCB. And voiceover was something I always kind of wanted to do, but knew it's a very separate skill set from on-camera acting. And so it would require another sort of buy-in, you know, lessons and equipment and a demo. And yeah, I just, at the same time that I started doing hosting and Twitch streaming, I started pursuing voiceover specifically for video games. And actually, Sissy was part of those sort of first few beginning like months, actually. We met because I interviewed Sissy about Firewatch.
And that's right.
Yeah. And then later a mutual friend said, oh, I know you're trying to get into voiceover and Sissy's doing a workout group for voiceover actors. You want to join? And I really miss that group. We'd just bring scripts or auditions, or in their case, auditions, and just kind of do them and give each other feedback. And it was amazing because, again, I interviewed Sissy before I'd booked anything, and she still treated me like a peer and, you know, would sort of put me in the pool for casting for things. And yeah, so just Sissy is a part of my origin story.
Oh, man. That's perfect. Oh.
Yeah, right?
I love that. I love that. My story is really similar. I have a business degree.
You're also at Full House.
Right, totally. I wanted to be an actor when I was a kid. And I remember telling my dad when I was like six, like, I think I want to be an actor. And my dad was like, ha, 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 no. And so I went to college and I got a business degree and a Spanish degree. And at the time I graduated, it was right after the dot-com burst. Wow, I just aged myself there. And my home state, Idaho, had a terrible economy. And Oregon, where I graduated from, had the worst economy in the nation. And I literally met a friend who, at a graduation party, who was like, yeah, I'm going to Palo Alto. I'm going to wait tables at this fancy sushi restaurant. And we get killer tips. And I was like, can I get a job? And he was like, sure. So I moved to California without like anything. I didn't know anybody. I didn't know what I was doing. You guys are getting the long story because I've answered, because like you said, I've answered this question a few times. So you're getting the long story. So I went to work at the sushi restaurant, and I'm pretty sure our owner had a debt to the Yakuza because we didn't get our tips for like 3 or 4 weeks. And if we didn't keep track, we wouldn't get them. Anyway, long story short, it was a really nice place. I ended up having a couple like regulars who'd come sit in my section, one of whom was a partner at a venture capital firm. And so I went to work for that VC. These were the guys that put the initial money into like Google and PayPal and Yahoo and Apple. Like I was actually working there when Google went public. It was insane. And then I went to work for a couple startup companies and hated it. Like I was like square peg round hole. This is, I don't, it was really not great. And I met some incredible people. I met my husband, but I just never felt like I was in the right place. And so my husband and I, my now husband and I went on a trip to Alaska, and we were out on the open ocean for 9 days. And we were talking with my aunt, who's like my person, about dream jobs. And I was like, I've always wanted to be a voice on The Simpsons, but you probably just got to live in Hollywood. And about a week after we got back from that trip, Nancy Cartwright, who is Bart Simpson, was on the radio promoting The Simpsons movie. And she was like, you know, you guys in the Bay Area, you're so lucky. You have one of the best voiceover schools in the country right in your backyard. And I was like,
wow,
I'm sorry, what? So I called that day to the place. I started taking classes that week. And 2 years later, I had an agent and booked my first job.
Wow.
Yeah.
So do you have to live in Hollywood?
It helps. Definitely helps. I don't know about now, but...
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I think actually now it's really anybody's guess. Most of the time they're still asking for people to be local to LA or wherever a lot of the studios are. Some people are still going into studios. But yeah, if you have a really nice, like, treated room and good setup, you can make a go of it on your own. But I think that's more so the established professionals who already have those working relationships with studios and companies and have the capital to make. I mean, it's honestly, to be honest with you, it's a big investment, having a booth or, you know, completely soundproof room and, you know, sort of like a like internet line and the mics. And it's a big buy-in. But I think it's a little more accessible right now because a lot of places are doing things remote.
Yes. And I know we're going to get to this. I still think it's incredibly important that that people know who you are. And a lot of that happens by being here. I don't know that animation will ever go away from LA. I think, you know, people who have made a name for themselves here can move away and be fine. Mm-hmm. But I think anybody who's trying to break in right now will have a much more difficult time.
I agree. I think in definitely for animation, definitely for union work.
Yes.
I think there's, you know, sort of like a little wiggle room for if I've seen a lot of, you know, sort of like non-union action on Twitter, just sort of like non-union games asking for submissions. And it said, you know, as long as you have your own remote setup. But yeah, it's, you know, that's always the question when people ask, like, how do you get into voiceover? Yes, acting like skills and classes, but also, yeah, just pretty much being where the action is.
Yep.
I wanted to backtrack a bit to what Erica mentioned about Sissy's workout groups. Like, what did those class or groups consist of? Like, what scripts were you using?
So sometimes we would have auditions. Sometimes, you know, we just have a character that we wanted to work on. For the longest time, I really struggled with like little kid sounds. I had a quote unquote mentor. I use that word lightly because that's what she wants to be. Tell me that I would never make it in animation. And it really stuck in my craw as much as I hate it.
Man.
And so I got in my head and I really wanted to work on that particular sound. If we didn't have like live auditions, then we'd just bring things that we wanted to work on. And it was great. I mean, it was such a one of the things I love the absolute most about voiceover, and I will say it until the day I die, is that it's the most supportive, wonderful, kind, giving group of people on the planet. You know, I can't tell you how many times, like, someone will come to me and say, you know, we're casting for this and such. Do you know of anybody, or are you interested? Well, you know, it's not something I'm really strong at, but you know who you should talk to is. And we all just do that because we all love each other and we really want everyone to work. And if I'm not going to book it, I want my friends to book it. And I mean that sincerely. It's not like a, it's not some BS thing that we say. I mean, it's, you feel it in every group that you're ever around.
Can confirm. Like, Sissy literally did that. I was like, I'm not really right for this. How about Erica? And, you know, I really didn't have that much experience at the time. So the fact that she stuck her neck out for me and recommended me really meant a lot to me, especially since she was BAFTA award winning Sissy Jones.
You stuck.
She brought her BAFTA, like, to class one time. But it was like it wasn't on purpose to show it off. Like, she had to bring it somewhere or something. Like, somebody asked her to bring it somewhere and she brought it. We just, like, never let her forget that. But yeah, it's true. And I mean, we all, in some ways, this industry is very small. And so everybody knows everybody else. And, you know, a huge part of continuing to work in this industry, aside from skill, is really kind of being cool.
Yeah.
It really is. I mean, just because everybody I know in voiceover, everybody I'm friends with, is just a delight. Like, I want to actually hang out with them outside of work. And yes, everybody, it's true. I will say it until the day I die as well. The voiceover is so supportive. Everybody is so welcoming. And that was what really struck me when I joined. And I just remember, you know, everybody who, like, to me, I looked up to so much. Like, Rob Paulsen, I think we were on Rob Paulsen's podcast together, and he didn't need to do that. I was, like, such a beginner. And, you know, he and other people would listen to my demo. And so part of it, I felt like in some ways I just was in the right place at the right time. But also, Rob said, you know, success is where luck meets preparation, mm-hmm. Which made me feel a little better because, yeah, I did live in Hollywood and did know a lot of successful voice actors or game developers. But at the same time, I did have years and years of training and a demo that I paid a lot for to hand to people and say, like, here is what I sound like. That's kind of your calling card, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, man, it's just been amazing. And every single day I wake up and I feel grateful that I get to do this.
Same.
Is the reason why everyone is so supportive and, like, just amazing because it's so small? Or is there another main reason?
You know, I don't do on camera. I'm just going to say that. But from what I have heard from my friends who do, there's a certain level of competitiveness that comes when getting the role comes down to what you look like. And because voiceover is all about what you bring to the table, it's just a different vibe.
Yeah, I think because, you know, I do on camera, and when you show up in the waiting room, it's like looking at a multiverse lobby or something, where it's just like you see all these different versions of yourself. And I don't know, I feel lucky that all the people that I know from acting on camera are also really, really cool. But I don't know. It is different. There's a level of competition. Like, I can't imagine people in the same category as each other for a big job in on camera recommending somebody else. I don't know why. I think also for voiceover, to be honest with you, we're a little more replaceable for voiceover.
Also true.
You know,
I've literally been recast with, like, one of my best friends.
Oh my God, yeah. And they say that you're not anybody in voiceover until you have replaced somebody and been replaced. And mm-hmm. And at this point I've been both. So, you know, I feel like I've earned my
stripes. Somebody.
Yeah. But I think it's, you know, and up until actually recently, there weren't really celebrities in voiceover. It was you in some ways could just like, it seemed like you could just kind of do the work and do the acting and still kind of walk around at a convention anonymously. Yeah. That is not the case anymore for a lot of people in the industry. But, you know, still there's that holdover of, yeah, you know, everybody really does know each other and there's a lot less ego involved, I think. Still trying to figure it out. I'm just glad it's that way.
Yeah, it's great. It's a really good group of people.
Mm-hmm. I have a question from my personal curiosity about being replaced. If you are replaced, do they notify you or are you just left to, you figure out when like, oh, I'm not in that game anymore, I guess, when it came out?
Ugh, depends. Oh, gosh.
Oof, there's been some brutal ones, man. Oof. I got recast once because I didn't have enough Twitter followers.
Yeah, what? Which wow. just what? Kills me.
Yeah,
they told you that?
I found out later because I was friends with the dev. They invited me to their party. I forget which. It was some con somewhere. They invited me to their party, and I went up to the dev who I had been working with on Phonepatch, and I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited about this character. She's such a badass, and I love her, and she doesn't use her sex appeal to get things, and she's, oh, I'm so excited. And he was like, yeah, cool, and like walked away, and I was like, that was weird. And then I found out later that they had talked that day that I didn't have enough Twitter followers, and he was going to have to fire me. But we've since broken bread and like had a few drinks over it, and you know we can laugh, cry about it now.
Hey, that's real dumb.
Yeah,
it's so bad, and like this is the second sort of interview I've done in like the last couple of months where somebody's like, "Yeah, I didn't get the role because I didn't have enough of a following," and it's like, oh, it really will not make your game better or more marketable to have, unless you get somebody like Keanu Reeves, honestly, or somebody so huge and universally beloved, it will not sell more units. It absolutely will not. And also, I have to say, sort of coming up, doing this backwards, I think a lot of very talented voice actors are now also doing Twitch streaming and things. But I sort of did the reverse, and I was sort of in the internet world and then in voiceover, or I made it in one and then the other. And like I talked about this with Sungwon, who is an incredibly talented voice actor. You know, there is a little bit of that stigma now because it's like, oh, they have a lot of Twitter followers before they started doing a lot of voiceover. That means that they're not good and that, you know, they only got cast because of their following, which it does happen for a lot of influencers, and you see it in a lot of movies. And I have heard like the tea is that sometimes big famous people have to be partially revoiced because it, as I said, is a very different skill set being on camera and voiceover. So yeah, that was a lot of rambling to say that I just really honestly Twitter followings and popularity and talent in voiceover have zero correlation. Zero.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. There's a whole subsegment of voiceover that is not impressions, but soundalikes, where if they have to replace dialogue for celebrities, they don't want to pay the, you know, $10 million an hour to bring them into the studio. So they'll have people like me come in and do, you know, pickups. I do it a lot for movie trailers and I've done a couple of games and things like that. So, yeah.
Are you allowed to say any of the ones that you've done?
For movie trailers, yes. I do most of Charlize Theron's. I do Jessica Chastain's. I've done Emma Thompson, Penelope Cruz, Rebel Wilson.
Wow, that's sad.
Yeah, it's really
range
fun.
On this woman.
I did all of the Atomic Blonde trailers.
Wow.
Whoa. It was really fun. Yeah.
Oh, I can totally hear that. Oh,
yeah, it was
my
funny.
Gosh.
I like a year ago or so, I heard a Dior commercial on the television. I was like, those bastards, I don't remember auditioning. Oh, no, that's not me.
I haven't booked a voice match yet, but I keep getting specifically auditions for Scarlett Johansson and Emma Stone, and I feel like I just really
I can hear that. You know what? You have to listen to the music. You have to listen to the musicality. You can't listen to the words.
It's true. It's more about like the breathing patterns. And so like I figure at some point I will. At some point.
Call me next time. Call me.
We'll Well, I need help. Help me, sissy. Back to the old days of you giving me advice.
No, I love it. Because you have exactly that rasp that they do that I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it.
Man.
Since we were talking about being replaced, do you have any humorous rejections? I know it'd be easy to have really depressing ones, but...
Actually, let me look this up. It looks like I have about 7 gigs worth of files of things that I mostly did not book.
Man.
Yeah. The way I've heard it once is that being an actor is being professionally rejected.
Yes.
I mean, that is the job. Like, we get to do the acting maybe if you're very lucky for like a 16th of the amount of time you spend getting rejected.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A couple of things on that. One of the things I have discovered as my superpower is forgetting auditions. For that exact reason. I can't tell you how many times I've gone into the session and they're like, we loved your audition. And I'm like, cool. Do you have it? but also when I first got into VO 10 years ago, the ratio for booking a nationwide union spot 10 years ago was one booking for every 250 auditions. And I believe that has quadrupled at this point. Oof. So one booking for every like 1,000 auditions. for nationwide union television. I mean, that's like that's the moneymaker.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just throwing spaghetti constantly against the wall. And then there was a booth director that I worked with ages ago when I was first getting started. And she said, your job is not to do the gig well, because by the time you get to the gig, the check is getting cashed. Your job is to audition well. And it is multiple hours unpaid. So do with that what you will.
Yeah, that's the thing is, you know, people think that, you know, actors make so much money. I mean, some of them do if you're above scale, but
Right. Mostly
you got to think about the hours and hours and hours, you know, that you spend auditioning or writing emails or talking on the phone or you know, just practicing that you don't actually get paid for, like, because when you're not on the clock. You know, and as far as rejections, yeah, it's just constant. And I think some that have stung the most were actually more on camera things, because there's something about voiceover which just like, maybe it's because there's more auditions, or you just like, you send it off into the void and, you know, you have to be a little less vulnerable. But, and you don't have to like put on makeup and like set up all your lights and everything. There's a little less buy-in involved. But like, oh my gosh.
I would imagine too, it's less of the convergence of all the things that make you get that audition for on camera. You look the part, you're the age of the part, you're, you know, whatever for the part. Whereas voiceover, it's less funneled.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I struggled for many, many years before sort of being able to make a living just with acting. I remember a time, you know, just post-college, between when I decided to really go hard on acting and, you know, graduating, where it was, I think it was like just 4 years of living with my mom, which is a privilege, but just living with my mom and like working 3 jobs, like retail and catering and office work and auditioning on the side. And I had this agent and she just like never communicated with me. And one time I emailed her and I said, hey, I see this sort of like public listing for this project that, you know, I know the property that it's based on and I think I'd be right for it. Like, would you be able to submit me? And she's like, no, they're looking for like Jamie Chung pretty girls. Like, you don't have any photos that are really sexy, you know, and, you know, and you don't have any credits. So you don't have like any recent credits. Like, no. So I'm not going to even submit you. I'm not going to bother and waste their time. I was like, okay, cool, moving on. And then, like, during one time I updated her, I'm like, hey, I'm taking, like, martial arts right now and dance, and here are new headshots. And then she emailed me back, all in caps, don't you realize this is the middle of pilot season? And that was kind of the last I heard of her. So,
what?
Yeah. And, you know, at the time, it's devastating, and I'm, you know, for anybody listening that's had rejections, at the time it's devastating, but later you look back and you're like, yeah, I could, you know, I wasn't who I am now. And
well, and I mean, what a gift to know that that was not the right fit.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Now, oh my God, I love my agents and my manager so much. Like, they just get me and we text and like hang out. It's great.
It makes such a difference. It does.
Ugh.
Do you two have any tips for auditioning in general? Because even just from someone who like has to listen to auditions in our jobs, it's already stressful enough trying to go like, they all sound good. I don't want to say no to anyone.
Yeah. I mean, my thing is, if I'm not having fun, you're not having fun, right? Mm. Like, if I'm just sitting there, like, there are times I get an audition and I'm like, the fuck is this? Like, these words do not make sense. You do not want a conversational read when you're like introducing, right? Like, come on. If I'm sitting there judging the copy, you are going to hear me judging the copy. If I'm sitting there going, I hate this fucking character. I swear like a trucker. I hope that's okay.
Welcome.
I hate this fucking character. I don't want to be reading this fucking character. You are going to hear that as you're listening to me audition. So if I'm not like actually feeling it and loving it in the minute, I walk away. And I come back later.
Dang.
Queen.
Yeah.
Also, oh my God, I was just going to say something horribly profound and it's gone. What was I going to say? Where did it go? I don't know.
Okay,
yeah.
Well,
thing is, if you beat it to death, like if you read it 60 million times, it sounds like stale bread. So what I try to do, and sometimes I do and sometimes I don't, is I will read it first to get the cold read out of the way. I will read it again once I've kind of got an idea in my head. I will listen back and then try to do one final take and send, because I don't have the time and I don't think anybody else has the energy to listen to something I have beaten to death. So
yeah, that's a huge one for me. Is I remember in the early days, I was so precious about every audition because, you know, I would get like one a month, maybe, you know, and so it was like, this is my shot, ride or die, like, you know, lose yourself in the moment. And so, yeah, and please excuse me for fanning, but like I'd frame fuck it, if you will.
Yes.
And it's just like, you know, I'd like chop it up and Frankenstein it and like spend like days thinking about it. And yeah, it was just, it would be so wooden and calculated. And these days, you know, I have the privilege of having so many more auditions. And it actually has helped my reads to just not care as much. You have to care just the right amount. Like, it's such a balancing act. You know, you have to care enough to, you know, be invested in and think about the character and make strong choices. That's a huge thing. But then, like, not care too much so that you don't start messing with it and getting in your head. That's the problem. It is both a blessing and a curse to be a gamer and a fan of animation and stuff, because I'll be like, I know what this is. Oh my God, I want this so bad. No, but I mustn't want it too much.
Yes.
It's a weird balancing act. Like, make a strong choice,
but don't care too much.
Yeah, don't go too wild. Just like go with an instinct. And then, you know, for as far as knowing the genre or things, like knowing as much as you can about the property is so helpful. But also don't be like,
Yeah.
That's the thing, is that I feel like one reason that I've been able to book games very consistently is because I just have this whole history of love for games and game narrative and game character. And so I'll read a description and I will either guess or be able to figure out, you know, what the actual property is. Because, I don't know, I'm sure other people have talked about this on your podcast before, but we don't generally know. We don't get character art for games. Like, a lot of times it's just random lines that don't make any sense.
It'll come in and it's like, Project Closet.
Yeah. And you're like, what is this? And, you know, it matters if you're reading for Final Fantasy versus GTA, you know, but you don't know. Sometimes when you get to the studio, they still won't tell you. I have friends that didn't know what game they were in until they were playing it. And they were like, wait a minute. That's
I didn't
me.
Know I was in Fallout 4 until someone on Twitter was like, hey, are you on Fallout 4? And I was like, no. And then they sent me a clip and I was like, oh, hey, look at that.
And wow. So I have an advantage of being a gamer and a lot of times sort of knowing what it is. And so I know the genre, I know the tone, I know sort of like what they're going for. And of course, you don't want to ever just sort of fall into the trap of like going for what you think they want. But at least knowing like, well, would this voice fit into this world is like super helpful, I think. Yeah. And, you know, also weirdly, game mechanics make a big difference. It's like, is this first person or third person or a top down shooter or
like
roguelike?
Could you imagine if we were actually given that information when we got the audition? This is a first person shooter set in a fantasy world. Boom. Oh, that's all I need to know.
God. I remember my first time doing a Western animation show. And they were like, oh, okay, here's artwork of your character. I only got an animatic with some temp track to it, and here's the music. And I was like, what?
Am I going to get in trouble for having this?
I know. I was like, wait, you mean you're allowing me to know? Most of the time, I'm standing alone in a room with an Excel sheet of words. And if I'm lucky, they'll tell me, you know, what the game is. But, oh, man, I get it because, you know, games sort of comes from the tech, like it's less like it's the industry still treats it a little less like film or TV and more like tech, you know, so you don't want to get scooped, you don't want leaks. But to be honest with you, most leaks do not, I don't know of any major leaks that have come because of voiceover. Like everybody
listen, I walked into a session for a game. And the devs were like super pissed when I walked in and I was like, what is happening? And they're like, the fucking guy that was in here right before you live streamed his session to Facebook. And I was like, I'm sorry, what?
Wait, what?
Who does that? And will he ever work again? The answer is no.
Well, and that's the thing is that it's like, again, the industry's so small and it's like we are legally under NDA. Like that is an actionable offense and everybody will remember. And so it just really doesn't have, that is bonkers. My insides curled up hearing you tell that story.
Well, and to Erica's earlier point.
Oh, sorry.
No. I just, before it gets away, to Erica's earlier point about, not wanting it too badly. When I first moved here to LA, I mean, listen, I booked my second audition out of the gate in San Francisco. It was for The Walking Dead. It was a huge fucking game. It was for Katya. Like she was it was a big deal, right? I moved here. My husband was still commuting up to the Bay Area. I didn't book for a year, you guys.
What?
And it was terrifying. And my agent called me. I mean, I had left my high-paying golden handcuff job. My husband was still commuting. We didn't have kids yet, thank God. But I was freaking out. And I was like, oh my God, we've moved here for me. And I have to... And my agent called me and he was like, Jones, you are so desperate to book. I smell it in your slate. If I smell it, they smell it. No one hires desperation. And I was like, okay, yeah, thanks, got it. And he was right. I went, I started taking classes, I like dove into that, building up my confidence. And as soon as I stopped caring so freaking much, I started booking. So just to go along with what Erica was saying earlier about being excited about it but not needing it, it's this weird fine line that you have to walk.
Yeah.
That's a good agent.
Yeah, he's a great Dean Pinero. He's my guy. I love him.
Max, you were going to say?
I was going to say the only actors I've heard of who have leaked stuff have all been non-VO actors.
Yeah.
I think this was an on-camera person who did that thing, I think.
Yeah, and all those cases where people, it wasn't the audition process. It was when they've been cast and doing sessions for a while. And then it's like, oh, I'm just going to drop something on Twitter without letting anyone know. Or I'm going to post this photo from inside the booth.
The thing is that because, I come from the world of online, but, you know, I knew very early on that, you know, this would in some ways sort of conflict with things. And then when I started booking, yeah, I had to sort of be careful about what I talked about online or what I said in some of my video game show. I like now am still very careful about that because like I used to constantly post about what games I was playing, what games I liked or speculate about things. But now when I do that, a lot of people are like, oh, does this mean you're in it? And I'm like, no, please don't do that.
It's so bad. I don't say a thing like until it is out. Like, yep. They just announced Ark, right, at the Game Awards.
God, yeah.
And I'm in, so I can say because their PR has emailed me, I'm in the animated series, which I'm super excited about, right? It's a good role and like, it's good. But I didn't want to say a thing. Like Wes Gleason, who was a director, posted like, I'm super excited to be a part of this. And I was like, I'm not going to say anything. And then, you know, Vin Diesel was like, I'm super excited to be a part of this. And I was like, I'm not going to say anything. And then Michelle Yeoh was like, I'm super excited. And I was like, mm-mm. And then PR was like, are you going to tweet about this or what? okay, I'm sorry.
No, you did the right thing, sissy, I think.
You should follow after Michelle Yeoh.
Right? Yes, exactly.
Yeah, actually, for Cyberpunk, there was something somewhat similar in that. So I got it through my agent, you know, I got the casting through my agent. But I found out later that a lot of, like Twitch streamers and personalities, had been approached directly by CD Projekt Red to be in the game. And they made like, it's so cool. Like they have, you know, sort of characters that are them or like named after them and they scanned their faces in to look like them. My character looks like me, but was not designed to be me. And I ended up playing like 4 or 5 other characters too. And so as the game's announcements happened, a lot of my friends started posting like, I'm in this game, you know, because they got the okay from CD Projekt Red since their characters were modeled after them and they wanted people to know that they were in the game. And I was like, oh gosh, I want to say something like, because everybody's going to announce, you know, on launch day, you know, that they're in it. And, like, I don't want to be able to say something now. And so we had to my agents and managers and me all had to sort of like talk with CD Projekt Red too, because again, like I was also in contact with their PR team about sort of gaming and influencer stuff. And so like we finally worked out and they let me announce early, which was really, really kind of them. Cause I just like that project was like such a big part of my life and such one of the biggest things that I'd done up until that point. So it's a weird line to walk and we're kind of in the Wild West a little bit still with the interaction of the community, gamers, developers, actors, specifically for games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to backtrack. I think it was like 10 or 15 minutes ago when Sissy was, before I forget, talking about like reading something 60 million times and trying not reading that because then it'll get stale. Mm-hmm. And I have like a two-parter question. First, how often do you get like the scripts before you go to record?
Never.
Sorry. Oh my god. Oh
no, listen, oh. I like Firewatch sometimes. Call of the Sea the night before. But no, never. Never. Oh, I mean, yeah. like Eric was saying, sometimes we don't even know the name of the project. Sometimes it's just like, hey, you auditioned this thing 3 months ago. They want you to come in. You're going to do a couple of different characters. Okay. And it could be that whatever we auditioned 3 months ago was a dummy script. I booked one that I'm not going to say anything about, that I auditioned originally in 2018, early 2018. They went with somebody else. They recast it in 2019, had me do another round of auditions, did a callback, booked the callback, found out I booked the thing, but the thing was a dummy script that had nothing to do with the actual game. And they're still currently writing the character that they're going to have me record. I booked that fucker in 2018 and I have not started recording yet. What? And of course I haven't seen a script, and I won't until I get in there because it's under tight wraps. And that's just the nature of this business.
I'm sorry, I wasn't laughing at you guys. I was laughing because I remember when Final Fantasy VII Remake came out and there was this article that came out where it's like, the actors for Final Fantasy VII didn't get their scripts until like the day before. And everybody in the voiceover industry went, whoa.
Yeah. And?
Uh-huh. And like, I felt bad for the person who wrote it because, you know, I mean, it's like, it seems like something that you would get would be to get as much information as possible to inform your decisions. But that is like one reason why when people ask like what sort of classes to take, I always say cold reading and improv.
Yep.
Because you're going to have to turn on a dime and you're like, oh, I'm not doing a JRPG. Cool. I'm doing a grounded war game. Okay. Great. I just got to get into that mindset and create everything again from scratch and just come up with a voice right on the spot. And, you know, I have been lucky in some projects to get, it really depends. Like most of the time, yeah, you just show up and they tell you who you are. Actually from Marvel, it was really cool because, we didn't know. I was doing Walla for it at first. None of us knew what it was. And they told us what it was. And then Christopher Sean and I were like, started freaking out. And we were like, excuse me, though, which superheroes exist in this version of the Marvel Universe? Is it like MCU rules or, you know, comic book? Or? And so they're like, oh, good question. Let's ask. And they sent us this list of heroes we could talk about for the game, and he and I were just like, oh, this is so cool. So it's like there are spontaneous surprises like that actually lead to interesting, fun choices. But I have been lucky in some jobs that really where the writers really care about the narrative and the character development, getting it maybe a week early and getting
really?
To read over it. Yeah.
A week?
Oh my God. Yeah.
The earliest I've ever got it is the night before.
Right.
Literally. Like The Walking Dead, I found out the night before, spoiler alert, Katya died. Like I was like, oh, hey, I have a session coming up. Maybe I'll fly up to the Bay Area for it. Or I can't do it for this one, but maybe I'll do it for the next one. And then I read the script and I was like, well, balls.
Oh, no. Yeah, I think... It depends. And to be honest, like, I think, you know, I was talking with other developer friends about this, and I said that I really would love to see more collaboration between, you know, so the writers and the narrative team and even designers and the actors, because, you know, it has helped so much on projects where I've been, where I knew what the game was, I played a lot of it, you know, I knew, you know, knew some of the writers and we could discuss, you know, they were like, oh, yeah, just like text me questions you might have. And I'm like, tell me about the lore of this world. because, you know, then you can make informed choices. And even sometimes, you know, design wise, how do I say this? Make choices knowing how people will want to play it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, again, that it is, you know, we come from this history of there didn't used to be voice acting for video games, you know, and having, you know, really talented actors and this huge pool of actors auditioning and doing and helping tell these stories
is somewhat new. And so I think we sort of come from the days of like Pong or, Jumpman, where voiceover is sort of an afterthought in some cases. And a lot of our favorite studios like Naughty Dog or Insomniac or, the studios that have the money and the time for it are able to collaborate with actors a lot more for performances. And that's such a gift.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And the reason I asked that question was because I worked with a dialogue VO producer a while back. And when it was brought up, like, oh, hey, this actor wants to get the voice or the script a few days early, like, can we send it to them? And his response was, they ask for that all the time, but they don't read them.
Bullshit. Sorry.
No.
If I get a script, I read every fucking word before I get in there.
Yeah, for me, I try to play the game if I can. And I was so, I was so lucky with Destiny. They gave me a code for the game and all of the DLC. And they had a little care package for me with like a shirt and the art book and a little note on a postcard from the devs saying how excited they were for me to join. Like when I auditioned for initially, I didn't know what it was. But then once I booked it, they were like, okay, it's Destiny. Here's an opportunity to play it. And that was a huge gift.
That's really cool. Listen, if I get, 250 pages the night before a session, I can't read that. But if I do get a script before the session, hopefully with a little bit of leeway, which means the night before, yes, I will read it. I will. I think it's important to be, prepared as we can be, because typically we are thrown into the ice water and told to sink or swim.
Yeah. And it's just, it really is such a testament to like so many of my peers that I look at them and these like incredible characters they've crafted. And sometimes it's just a split decision that happens in the booth. Mm-hmm. Which is bonkers, because for on camera, you spend months training or memorizing dialogue or, talking and rehearsing. And for this one, not only do we not always get the script or know what the game is, like, we don't know necessarily like what the person we're talking to is saying, there could be a whole script, like a cutscene, but we only get, our dialogue in an Excel sheet. So, you got to kind of make your best guess.
Well, and I think, that to me, in terms of rare experiences, again, going back to Firewatch, was not only was I given the script ahead of time, not only were Rich and I allowed to record at the same time, like I was in this booth and he was in his home studio, and Sean Vanneman Skyped us together, and we actually recorded it as a dialogue, which never happens. But they also invited us to be a part of the process leading up to the launch and release of the game. I mean, they invited us to the GDC party. We got to meet people as they were experiencing the first 15 minutes of the game. I hired PR, and they actually let me talk about the game. Imagine that. They didn't take my firstborn. And, it was as much a collaborative experience as it could be from me sitting on this side, literally being the dancing monkey. But given that I didn't actually write the code, they really made me feel like a part of the team. And Call of the Sea has done the same. It's harder to do with big studios, and I totally get that. But a lot of the indies are really interested in a more collaborative effort with their actors, which has been really, really awesome.
And it makes such a difference. I mean, when you hear your conversations in Firewatch, it's so obvious you guys are playing off of each other, because, a lot of times our lines exist in kind of a vacuum and, but hearing when actors get to be, responding to each other, that's like reacting, and it's so amazing. Like, Firewatch hit me like a ton of bricks. I mean, I think there's somewhere out there, there might still be footage of me starting out the game and just the gut punch of the writing, and then your guys' conversations, just like I was like crying in the live stream. Yeah,
it's like the really first 15 does. Minutes of Up.
Oh, like, my God, it is.
Here's a gut punch. Have a nice day.
Right. And then, like, hearing the rapport of you guys. I mean, did you actually do it chronologically? Did you record it?
We did. And the interesting thing about that game in particular was that they were writing it as we went. So we recorded for 2 years. So we would do like 2 or 3 sessions and then we wouldn't hear from him for like 6 months. And I was like, I've been recast. Oh, God. Yeah. You know, and I'd be like checking in with Rich. I'm like, hey, have you heard anything from the guys? He's like, no, you weirdo. But yeah, so they so we actually recorded an entirely different ending for that game. The first pass we recorded about 2/3 of the way through the game, Delilah tells Henry he's crazy and to leave her the fuck alone. And then she goes cold and you don't hear from her for the rest of the game. And Vanneman came back and he was like, it doesn't work. It's just we have to have Delilah. And I was like, oh, do tell.
Yeah.
And so we re-recorded the ending. But because we had the time, you know, for them to play test it and then go back and rewrite it. It was awesome. It was such a great experience.
It's amazing.
Writing chronologically sounds like a dream.
Yeah, I can't believe that's
recording
thing.
Chronologically is a dream. Otherwise, it's like, wait, what's the context here? Who is this person I'm talking to?
Oh, man. But yeah, it's and at the same time, I still really do love it. Like, I love, you know, being on method and, like, preparing and, like, you know, but at the same time, there's something really thrilling about having to make that split-second decision and having it be almost completely theater of the mind where you have to just sort of, you have to remember to ask sometimes, too. It's like, how far away is this person I'm talking to? Mm-hmm. And that's a huge one. How far away are they? Like, is it raining or windy or, you know, where am I? Is it cold? You know, it's just all these conditions that you have to sort of build the world inside your head while you're just sort of talking into this can. And I love that. I love that. I want to do, 2020 was supposed to be the year that I got to do more mocap and like really get into mocap. But, you know, then 2020 happened. So I actually had to do like a motion capture reference in my living room here. And, you know, where they, you know, just sort of like filmed me, you know, my face while I was saying the lines. And that was such an interesting experience because, again, you have to sort of like recreate this whole world, you know, in your living room, in this booth. Oh, man. I love this. I love this so much.
Yeah.
One thing I do, and I don't know, one thing that really helps me sort of get into the characters' heads, I make playlists. I make a lot of playlists. You know, I have a ton of Spotify playlists that are like, you know, about the character or about how they feel about other characters or about the game itself or, you know, just like moments that they have in the script as they happen. And that's like super good, like listening to it on the way there or to get ready. It really helps me kind of just slide into that a lot easier.
I try to think about what they're wearing. Like,
ooh.
Like, what's a character wearing? Because that defines so much of who we are, what we present to the world, and, you know, how we, like, with Call of the Sea, you know, she's mid-Atlantic, and it's this whole 1930s, da-da-da-da-da. And I did a lot of research into, like, Katharine Hepburn and Eleanor Roosevelt and, you know, all of these women. But they very talked like this because they were very, they were in the public eye and they spoke to people all the time and there was a confidence about them. But Nora, even in the way that she dresses, I mean, she's got these gloves on all the time and you know, she kind of has a muted color palette to her and she's just not someone that has that level of confidence. And so even that changed the way that she spoke, as far as I was concerned. You know, she talks with a little bit more of a subdued voice, really. Really. Not really, really. But, you know, that, even that just really helps me understand the character how they dress, their level of confidence is everything.
Wow. Yeah, just like little things. I don't think about that. Did you know what she was wearing? Like, did you get the character breakdown with a picture, or did you make that choice and then you got to collaborate with it?
I don't remember if I saw a picture of her, but they showed me like a slice of the game. I think the slice that they used to pitch the game. And, you know, they talked about how she had this disease and she was on a mission to save her husband and yakety yak, but, that she'd spent her life being ill. And, you know, you try to think about the headspace that puts a person in. You spend your life being ill and your husband has to leave for 2 years to try to save you. And what does that do to a person, you know? But they had this whole backstory for her that was just incredible. I mean, again, same with Firewatch. I got this whole background about who these people are and how they ended up to where we see them in the game, and the people that surround them, and the lives they've lived and lost, and the loves they've lost, and blah, blah, blah. But all of that is just so incredible. I mean, it was the same with The Walking Dead. I don't know if you remember, there's a character in the woods named Jolene. She was crazy Jolene. She had the crossbow. Mm-hmm. And they had a whole backstory for her about how she had a daughter that had been kidnapped by the people at the dairy. And so she kind of looked at Clementine as a surrogate daughter. I mean, it was just this whole thing that never comes out in the game, but really informed my portrayal of her and her insanity in a way that I don't think would have been as real if I was just putting on a crazy voice. You know what I mean?
I think that you do find out about it. Like, if you ask her enough questions.
Oh, really?
Like, there's something. Yeah, because I do know that backstory.
Huh.
Because she's like, oh, my little girl. And, like, she's looking through the scope, and she's like, at Clementine, and she's like, I'll save you, my little girl.
Yeah. Huh. Well, look at that. You
remember? Somebody over there.
Slightly unrelated, but how do you two like to receive direction? Like, with the directors you've worked with that you enjoyed, what were they doing that you enjoyed so much?
I love directors that can really paint the scene. And I love a director who will do a line read of efforts so that I don't have to do 15,000 fucking screams to get the fucking scream they want. Wes Gleason is a beautiful example of that. He was my director on Arc and a bunch of other stuff that I've worked with him on in the past. But he really sets the scene for who are the people that are there with me? What is my relationship to them? Why is this scene happening? What's the emotional heft of the scene? Are we in battle? Is this an intimate moment? And then he lets me play. And we'll usually, you know, my preferred way is to do three in a row because I'm usually like, my C take is usually always just like, mwah. My A take is like, what the fuck was that? But, I like being able to play a little bit. So I'll try to do like one as written, one with a little bit of like flair, and then one with like, you know, a little ad-libbing or pre-life, right? Like, you know, throwing something like that onto the top of a line before you say, I'm so bored. Because I don't know, there's a million ways you could say I'm so bored, but to actually be like, I'm so bored. It might not be what the writer heard in their head when they wrote it, but to be able to have that level of playfulness when I'm actually delivering the line is usually the line that gets taken. So I love having a director that'll let me play.
Yeah, same. I mean, because as we've said before, so much about this is theater of the mind. The more a director can really make that moment, can convey that moment to you, is just such a joy to work with, and somebody who will sort of find the character with you and like really be willing to because like when you play these characters, you know, I need structure. I also need validation constantly. Actors are a very insecure, superstitious lot. So, but just, man, it's like a dance, you know,
it's, you know, whether it's with somebody else that you're reading with, if you are lucky enough to get to read with somebody, or with the director, of you know, this push and pull of like discovery together, you know, where they guide you, but they feel the way you're pushing and will sort of channel that idea and concept into their direction to you. And, you know, I mean, I think, yeah, it's funny because I don't know that when I think of all of the amazing directors I've gotten to work with, I don't think there's that much they have in common in terms of style other than being able to get me to that moment and collaborating with me and telling me I'm a good girl that does a good work.
Then what's also the best and worst piece of direction you two have gotten?
Oh, God. So sometimes when you're doing projects that are translated, like dubbing, the producers are on the line, or you have gotten a very quickly translated script, or things don't quite fit or make sense, or they change things around. And there was one project where, you know, I was working with somebody who, like, everybody involved was great, but they were sort of live translating while I was there. Like, the producers were there live translating through the writer-director as I was doing it. And it would be like, I'd lay something down, and, you know, for dub, you have to convey emotion and do all the acting bits, except fit it into this, like, very specifically timed slot, right? And it'll be like beep, 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 and then you go and try to do as well as you can. And when you're live getting, you're getting sort of new information about the character and the story and everything really as it's happening, it's hard to sort of integrate all of that. And so that was such a dark night of the soul for me, because, you know, I'd worked with one of the people involved before, and they like called me up that night and they're like, we're not going to finish in time. I need to book you for an extra day. Like, what's going on? And I was like, I don't know. I'm just a bad actor. But then once we got like on that extra day, we got sort of like the fully translated script, and the producers weren't on the line, and we just like flew through it. We like got everything done that we had done like in the last 2 days in like that one afternoon, and we were like, oh, I think it was just a translation error, just like a communication breakdown. And that's, I don't know, it's so rare, because again, it's a small industry and everybody works together a lot. But I was just so terrified. I was more terrified that I was never going to work with these people again. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say probably the roughest one I've had is when a director is not able to hear a line outside of the way they hear it in their head, and they will only accept a take the way that they hear it in their head, and they will make you do it until they hear what they hear in their head, to the point of line reading every line, including death screams. And it's one thing to be like, this is the way we want the death scream to sound. It's another thing to be like, do it 15 times. And if it doesn't sound the way that I want it to sound, I'm still going to make you keep doing it. That is death to me. That takes away all the creation and the joy out of a session, where it's like, why don't you just get in here and do it? You know, like, if I'm not getting a line, give me a line read. But to do every line in a 4-hour session is murder.
Yeah, because then you just got to kind of slog through and be like, well, I hope that, you know, it's not like you're like compromising your artistic vision so much as like, it's just, you just hope that they got something that's usable.
Yeah, because there's no emotion in it. If I'm just mimicking, if I'm just aping, then
yeah.
There's no care. There's no love. There's no,
yeah,
I don't know.
Also, I mean, and this is actually important for actors just starting out, is to not let anybody push you beyond your limits and to not push yourself beyond your limits. Like, I know that sometimes, you know, for me, it was really rare to get booked early on. And so, like, every job was precious. And so they'd be like, hey, can you do these 800 lines in a session? And, you know, and it's all like battle chatter. And I'd be like, sure, yeah, I can do that. And in some ways, it was a crucible of training. And now every, you know, doing all the union sessions that are limited to 4 hours and, you know, we'll take care of your stress. Yeah, it's 2 hours for stressful battle chatter. It's just like a breeze now. But yeah, like I could have permanently damaged my voice doing some of the jobs that I did in the early days. And you know, it is
I've started working with a Dr. Rina Gupta, who's the like local laryngologist who works with SAG and all of the actors, and also Mindy Pack, who's a vocal health specialist. And we've started putting on seminars about how to warm up, how to take care of your voice, how to do screams without killing yourself. And we're doing a like an online convention in March focused around all of this. And I really, like, my goal in life is to get, you know, a standard 2 to 3 minute warm up before every video game session, because it doesn't take much. And that's the first thing I tell any students who come to me is they don't give a shit if you fuck up your voice. As long as they get the sound they want, they don't care. So it's your job to take care of you, because nobody else is gonna.
I've been very fortunate to work with a lot of directors, especially these days, I feel like, that just will stop and be like, are you okay? How are you feeling? Like, do you need to take a rest? Like, have some water. But yeah, they're especially starting out, it for whatever reason, you know, the sort of less professional a job can be, like, oftentimes it's just the more strenuous it can be on you. And, you know, I remember the day, the session that I went, wait a minute, I have a big audition after this, you know? I shouldn't be wrecking my voice for this game. Like, it's not worth, this job isn't worth it to me, as much as I love doing what I do, you know? I love doing what I do, and so I'm going to take it easy on my voice and not go all out on screaming.
Yeah, I had one where I was a player character, but they didn't want to localize. So it was all just grunts and growls and spits and barfs and stuff like that. And and it was a 9 a.m. session on like a Wednesday morning. And I left with my throat bleeding.
Oh, my gosh.
And at the time, I was the voice of Ralph's, the local grocery store. And I had a weekly session for Ralph's that I had to cancel because I couldn't talk about broccoli. And it's, you know, that's my bread and butter. Video games are fun. They don't pay the bills. commercials are my bread and butter. And so to have to cancel that for a random player character, I just won't do it anymore. If I see exclamation points and only exclamation points on an audition, I just don't do it. I'd rather save my voice.
Yeah, I think going through that crucible, and because I sort of cut my teeth on games, and like where just like half of it would be efforts, you know, fighting games and, you know, MOBAs and everything. Because I have vocal training, I'm able to have those 2 hour sessions and like go in for the heavy battle chatter without it damaging my, you know, sort of later sessions. But I still have to be mindful, you know, and take those breaks when they are offered, because, yeah, it's vocal health is super important. And I'm glad that it's, you know, something that is being discussed more.
Yeah.
This is not related to vocal health at all, but are there any performances lately that you two have seen and thought were something special that went largely unnoticed by the general public? And don't it be games?
Well, the thing is that I feel like, I don't know, Bill Burr's performance in Mandalorian in that one scene, you know what I mean? I don't know if you guys watch
so
Mandalorian
great.
At all. Okay. God, it's just such an incredible performance. It's just so stunning and subtle. And I don't know. And it's not like it went unnoticed. Everybody was talking about it. But I just occasionally I'll watch certain performances or I'll play games and I'll just get obsessed, you know, and I'll just watch it again or play it again. I mean, the cast of Hades is rightly getting all the accolades they deserve for just these incredible and very sexy performances. just because I don't normally like roguelikes, but like they made dying a joy in that game. And that's like something really special, like the writing and the voiceover for that just like really kept me coming back to it. But again, I don't think it went unnoticed.
I've gotten to work on F is for Family for the last couple years doing like background noises and stand in for Laura Dern, more sound-alikes.
Oh my God, queen.
I was like, oh.
And Bill Burr is so nice. Like he's
oh
so
my God.
Like humble and kind, and that project was such a joy to work on because everybody there was just like, oh, hey guys, oh, it's really great to see you, how's everybody doing? I mean, it was like a little family. It was really sweet.
I will never not fangirl over you. Like, just like I can never be cool around you,
said the pot to the kettle. you know what I really love right now, and I'm going to keep it to games because I feel like a lot of on-camera portrayals get some good necessary love. Mm. I love that more and more performances in games are getting called out. I love that IGN is now doing, you know, best performance. I love that BAFTA has split performance into lead and supporting. Even the Game Awards, you know, they still have their one performer category, but at least they didn't do it in a commercial break this year. I do love that, you know, Miles Morales is getting some love for his portrayal in Insomniac's game. I love that, you know, Laura Bailey did this incredible villain and she's getting, you know, so much recognition for it. Well, you know, whatever. But whatever, villain, person, whatever. But, I love that people are getting called out. And I love that it's not just relegated to on-camera actors who are getting the love. Going back to having a following and getting a, you know, fucking video game character, it's nice to see workaday actors getting some appreciation.
Yeah. Also, I mean, like, yeah, everybody's really talking about, you know, Keanu Reeves' performance in Cyberpunk, and he's really great, but just, like, there's so many amazing side performances. And, like, Jackie, I think Jason Hightower, who's Jackie, like, the opening, like, one of the opening scenes where, you know, he's, like, if you do take the street kid path, it's, like, where he's just, like, befriending V, and I played as Jeremy Lee, who's insanely talented, too. She's got such range. They're talking, and just the rapport that they build in, like, this 2-minute conversation is remarkable. And again, I think it was, like, I don't think they didn't record together, but it just feels like such a natural, good conversation. That was, yeah, that really also blew me away.
Let's talk about Daisuke Tsuji in Ghost of Tsushima, right? Like, holy crap.
Yes. Like, good shit.
It's just, it's amazing.
Oh, that's the good stuff. Yeah, like this was such an incredible, like I was looking at the sort of like nominations for different voiceover categories this year. And it's just, they keep getting better and better. Yeah. Honestly, like it is so bonkers how good the performances are. And that's, you know, sort of a factor of the actors, definitely, but also of, I think, the industry caring a lot more about narrative and putting the time into the writing and the recording.
And casting appropriately. I mean, not Square Enix, but Don't Nod had a transgender actor playing a transgender character.
Yeah.
It's about time.
I have talked about this a lot about, you know, casting appropriately for things, and it just adds so much.
Yeah.
And there are so many things, you know, where I can't think of specific examples where it's like you can bring something like a lived experience, and I think it adds this extra layer
And also, you know, a lot of times traditionally marginalized actors don't get a chance to play just like just whatever, which is weird because, you know, in voiceover, there's the idea of like, oh, of course, anybody can play anybody because you don't see what they look like. And yet, you know, the industry has still shut certain people out from certain roles for a long time. But I feel so grateful I got into it at a time in which, like, a lot of the breakdowns that I get, my agents, I love them over at A3. They will give me whatever they feel is appropriate. I told them I don't want to ever audition for Black or Indigenous or Latina or, you know, things that I'm not. But they'll send me whatever they think I'm appropriate for. But I'm seeing more and more and more castings that are saying, we want somebody of Asian descent or, like, Asian American. Mm-hmm. We want somebody who identifies as, like, genderqueer or non-binary. And that, I can't imagine. I mean, just the fact that they have, like, non-binary characters in games now is just blows my mind. I see the progress happening, like, month by month, you know?
Yeah.
That's really cool. That's really cool. It is really such an amazing time to be a voice actor.
So, each episode, we have our guests ask a question to our next episode's guests. And in our last one, Rex Crowell asked, what existing story would you love to translate to a different medium and why?
I want a Jane Bond. Hell, I want a Jane Bond game, and I want to be the lead.
Yes. Oh, man. God, like to do like a new, and it's got to have a multiplayer so you can get that golden eye, the classic.
Yeah.
GoldenEye, you know, sleepover party nights.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many, I don't know, I feel like in some ways I should save my pitches for things, but especially for games. But it's like, it's so weird because, I mean, game dev requires so many more technical skills than, you know, and so you don't as much see the crossover from actor to game director as you do, like, on-camera actor to on-camera director, but I have this pitch for a mermaid game, narrative heavy, sort of like world exploration style mermaid game.
What?
Yes, right?
Do you need a sidekick?
And like you can date it in there, like, because, you know, it's like, it'd be like Mass Effect-ish, but underwater, but you're like exploring Atlantis-ish. I think, like, for a long time, there was an impediment to that because of underwater mechanics. But I'm just saying, like, Naughty Dog's, like, in Last of Us 2, that is the best swimming mechanics that I've ever played. Just saying. And
call of the sea. Sorry. I'm
I haven't gotten to play that yet. Something I'm so excited. Yeah. I have that in my queue. But I just, like, don't get to, man, it's so weird these days because I feel like ever since I started doing voiceover, I play fewer games than I'm actually making, which is awesome. But also, like, I miss just gaming every day.
Yeah.
Another thing is, oh man, guys, I have this, like, I'll give you the condensed version, but, like, if you get me with a drink in my hand at a, like, a game conference, I will corner you at a party and talk to you about how I want there to be more of a diversity of types of game. Like, for right now, I mean, you know, we all kind of come from the indie world, so we know that there's so many different types of games, but mainstream population, you know, if you ask them, like, oh, do you play games? They're like, oh, no, I'm not good at those. But it's like, games are more than just Fortnite or Call of Duty. It's like, not all games have shooting, and I want there to be more games that cater to different audiences. Right now, games is catered to sort of the traditional gaming audiences, or they have this concept. They think that it's all like 18, like, they're like 14 to 30-something-year-old males. But it's not. That's not gaming anymore. Like, gaming is everybody now. And it would be like if the film industry was 99%
action movies that were catered directly to, you know, that same population demographic. But it's not that anymore. And I want there to be more big companies that cater to different segments of the population and taking that chance, you know.
Well, I feel like that's happening. I mean, you're starting to see, you know, What Remains of Edith Finch and After Party and Firewatch and, you know, all these things that are being able to get made by smaller teams because of things like Unreal Engine and, you know, various other, I don't know, game developing tools.
Yeah. And
but you're able to make a proper game with a smaller team that still tells a compelling story. And I think that that's, you know, I'm a terrible gamer. I have a hard time even holding the controllers. but I was able to play After Party and I loved it.
Yeah.
It was great. Mm-hmm. It was super fun. I'm sure I could, you know, stumble around something else and not die as well. But it's getting there. And, as, you know, with mobile games as well, you've got, you know, Monument Valley and Donut County and, you know, all of these other incredible little mobile games that are fun and mm-hmm. a good entry point. And so not everything is going to be Spider-Man. Not everything is going to be The Last of Us. But there's some really good stories that are being told.
There definitely are. And indies will always drive the industry. That is always going to be the case.
Yeah.
Like, big AAA companies cannot pivot in the same way or take the kind of chances that smaller game companies are. But also, I mean, I want to see that, you know, we still get, you know, I mean, again, games are not film and we should kind of stop thinking about them like that. But looking at the diversity of types of films, like, I want to be able to hand my mom a game and be like, this is the kind of game that would be interesting for you who likes Kurosawa films, but she can't play Ghost of Tsushima because it has, like, it is a different language in some ways. Like, a gamer, it comes from, like, all of us understand how to hold a controller and stuff. But if you have to explain to somebody from the ground up how to, like, you know, there's a gaming, I can't think of the word, just like a sort of shared consciousness that we have for games. And most game development starts from that, where it's like with the premise that, like, oh, people know what different buttons will do or how to open menus. But, like, I want more people to be able to find gaming accessible. Just because I remember, like, the Wii when it came out. It was like, you know, senior citizens and children and, you know, people who didn't think of themselves as gamers could play games and enjoy it. And I think a lot of gamers also need to sort of reevaluate why we, like, are so precious about having things that are meant for us, the core gaming audience, you know? Because it's a new evolving world, and the more kinds of games that we have, the better content we get.
If I could snap my fingers, I'd be snapping my fingers right now and, like, saying preach.
Yeah, and I didn't even have to corner anybody at a party for this little speech. Yeah, I talk about it with a lot of my indie dev friends. How do we convince the industry to try to make different kinds of games and tell different kinds of stories, because then that will encourage people who don't traditionally feel welcome in the games industry to get into gaming and to get into being developers themselves, and then we get better stories. And you know, it's just this, like, cycle of inclusiveness that just leads to better media.
I have one last question then. What's a storytelling related question you'd like our next guest to answer?
All right. Games being adapted into films and television, yes or no?
I have an opinion about that. Surprise, surprise. Actually, for those two, and I mean, I guess that's probably the question to go with. But I am curious about if they could sort of collaborate more closely with a different discipline in gaming, what kind of game would they want to make?
Mm-hmm.
like Sissy and I were talking about how we wish that, you know, developers would collaborate more closely with actors and that would lead to more an interesting story and like character development. But, yeah. but like, you know, if, you know, writers meshed more with designers and could like spend more of their time with the designers, like what kind of interesting new mechanic would they want to integrate their story into? I don't know if there's a actually cogent way to ask that though.
There is. You already said it.
Oh, good. Excellent. Yeah, because to me it's fascinating that games, it incorporates so many different disciplines to make a story that is unlike anything else that we do, which is why I wanted to specifically get into acting for games.
Hell yeah. Is that it, Max?
Yeah, we will wrap up the show. I should have said this at the start, but for everything that you just heard in this podcast, the comments we make here are our own and no, they reflect the views of Insomniac, Sony, or Sony Interactive Entertainment. But thank you too for coming on. Where can people find you on the internet? If you want to shout out your website or Twitter or Instagram or TikTok?
God. Every day I wake up and I'm like, should I make a TikTok? I spend so much time on social media, but like, I really would like to make a TikTok. No, I'm sorry.
The answer is no. Please, if you have to ask, it's already too late.
Oops. Sissy, please.
I'm on Instagram and the Twitters at Sissy Speaks. And that's pretty much the best place to find me. I do have, like I said, an upcoming convention in March about some basic voiceover stuff and also vocal health. So for anybody who wants more information on beginning and intermediate voiceover stuff and also how to take care of your voice, keep an eye on my socials. I'll definitely be talking about it coming out.
Cool.
I am at Erica Ishii on Twitter and at the Erica Ishii on Instagram. I'm on there a lot. It really kind of vacillates between games stuff and anti-capitalist yes. and like spicy cosplay. Like, it's so weird. It's like, it's real eclectic. It's a real grab bag, but
it's
have
real
a good,
good
time.
It's real
oh,
good.
Thank you. Oh, we have fun on there. We have fun.
And you can find this podcast Twitter at ScriptLawCast. And our logo was done by Lily Nishida, and our music was done by Isabella Ness. And that's it. We apologize for the delay in releasing more episodes, everyone. COVID happened, and we got busy, but we're still going.
Doing what?
I don't think people know this, but working at AAA is hard.
Congratulations, by the way. It's been really, really cool to see the reception of your game. Congratulations.
Thank you. This year was something. I'm glad we're enjoying
sure
it.
Sure was.
Yeah. But thank you two for coming on and talking to us today.
Thank you, guys. It's really nice.
Oh, my gosh.
It's good to hear some of your stories.